Is it the Museum of Natural History or Unnatural History?
Sport is the ultimate equalizer with regards to, it doesn't matter your religion, your sexual orientation, your race, your whatever. It's how hard do you work at your sport? How much time do you devote to being the best?
A lot of times people tell me that I don't look queer enough, and I'm not sure how am I supposed to take that.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. India's government courts repression as Bi Life emerges, a Ugandan gay activist wins U.S. asylum, and it got better for Jason Collins, but it gets worse with Tony Perkins. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the LGBT communities around the world for the week ending September 20th, 2014. India's government is challenging a recent Supreme Court ruling that legally recognized trans people as a third gender. The High Court issued a landmark verdict in April that allows transgender people to identify themselves as such on official documents. But the country's conservative government, which swept to power following elections in June this year, has raised several objections to the ruling. India's Attorney General, Mukul Rohatgi, wrote in the filing that, "We just want clarification." Citing the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity and the country's entrenched caste system, he claimed that the ruling may pose problems both practically and politically, and that it seeks to create an ambiguity regarding entitlement to benefits. Some LGBT activists have charged that the government is stalling and has no intention of ever implementing the Supreme Court judgment. According to a census earlier this year, almost 490,000 trans people self-identified as Hijra, the cultural name or equivalent for third gender, a much higher number than previous estimates. India's Supreme Court angered equality activists in December with a ruling that reinstated the country's Crimes Against Nature Penal Code, Section 377, a remnant of British colonial rule that outlaws even private, consensual adult gay sex. The government has not acted to repeal the law because officials say it's rarely enforced these days.
Every U.S. federal appeals court to hear a marriage equality case to date has struck down state bans on civil marriage for same-gender couples. Cases involving bans in Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee were recently heard by the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg told a gathering at the University of Minnesota Law School on September 16th that the Sixth Circuit ruling could determine when the Supreme Court might act.
If that court should disagree with the others, then there will be some urgency in the court taking the case. But when all of the courts of appeals are in agreement, there's no need for us to rush to step in. It remains to be seen what the Sixth Circuit will rule, when it will rule. Sooner or later, yes, the question will come to the court.
There's little doubt how Justice Ginsburg will vote whenever a case does come before the High Court. She's already performed legal marriage ceremonies for at least 4 same-gender couples.
Elsewhere, a number of reports out of Egypt say that gay men using Grindr and other social media platforms are being entrapped by police and arrested for debauchery and indecency in what appears to be an escalating crackdown. Egypt actually has no law against same-gender sex, but those are the charges typically filed against LGBT people. Along with Grindr, a global app used by gay men seeking casual sex with other men or to find longer-term romantic relationships, the Egyptian government reportedly now has new technology allowing it to also comb through data from Skype, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. An official who insisted on anonymity said those taking part in debauchery or homosexual acts would be monitored. "For the protection of Egypt, we are safeguarding the values that are important to Egyptians and which will keep us safe," he said. A man who identified himself to the French news outlet France 24 as a gay activist named Samia A said the new intensity of this repression is tied to the political situation in Egypt and that the new, ostensibly secular regime wants to show Egyptians that it is as conservative as the ousted Muslim Brotherhood.
Three men have been arrested in Belgrade for assaulting a German gay man who is attending an LGBT rights conference in the Serbian capital. A closed-circuit camera captured the harrowing attack that left the unidentified 27-year-old man with what local media described as life-threatening head injuries and internal bleeding. His attackers were said to have shouted complaints about foreigners as they beat him with a heavy glass ashtray. Serbia has not been a hospitable place for LGBT people in recent years. Belgrade Pride has been canceled every year since 2010 because of what officials have called security concerns, although they blame massive flooding in the region for the cancellation of this year's event.
The St. Petersburg politician, credited with spearheading passage of the law in that Russian city to criminalize so-called propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations to minors, upon which the infamous national law was modeled, disrupted the opening of an LGBT arts festival this week. MP Vitaly Milinov and at least one of his aides, along with more than a dozen other men associated with the Russian Orthodox Church, doused the doors of two entrances to a St. Petersburg cafe hosting Queerfest's opening event on September 18th with a noxious green liquid and released an unidentified gas that sickened several people. At least 16 were hospitalized. The location for the opening event had to be moved at the last minute, but the thugs found it anyway. A majority of other venues lined up by the organizers, coming out, have since broken their contracts. But according to the group's latest online postings, dozens of activists who'd volunteered to mount the 10-day festival are determined to find ways to keep it going.
Meanwhile, stamps featuring the artwork of the gay erotic artist known as Tom of Finland have broken all sales records in that country. And a parcel plastered with those stamps successfully passed into Russia and reached its destination this week. The Finnish news agency, YLE, sent the package to see if it would be seized and declared to be in breach of Russia's so-called no-promo-homo laws. But a YLE correspondent in Moscow reported that the stamps didn't arouse the slightest bit of interest, not even when I pointed them out to the postal workers. They're happy so long as the postage is paid in full.
In other news, the Australian Football League has terminated its sponsorship agreement with Royal Brunei Airlines because of the tiny Southeast Asian nation's pending laws calling for gay people to be stoned to death. The AFL said last week it was reassessing the agreement and claimed that it was unaware of the draconian anti-gay law when the deal was signed. The revelation was an embarrassment for the league, which signed onto a nationwide anti-homophobia in sports campaign earlier this year and went on record a few weeks ago in support of marriage equality. The family of the current Sultan of Brunei, Hassanal Bokeha, has ruled the country for more than 600 years. The state-owned airline is part of his estimated $13 billion fortune. LGBT groups and some high-profile supportive allies began boycotting several luxury hotels that the Sultan owns in the U.S. and Europe soon after the horrific new laws were announced.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni struggled to find accommodations during a trip to Irving, Texas this week to promote investment and tourism in his country. He signed the East African nation's draconian anti-homosexuality law earlier this year that, among other provisions, punish some forms of private, consensual, adult gay sex with up to life in prison. Uganda's constitutional court overturned the measure on a technicality in August, but another version is on the agenda in the current parliamentary session. Local LGBT activists vowed to hold protests outside whichever hotel Museveni stayed in, and many of the area's top hoteliers have wanted to avoid the possibly disruptive controversy. He had originally planned to stay at the prestigious Four Seasons Hotel in Irving until managers canceled his reservation after a blog post in the LGBT Dallas Voice newspaper noted Museveni's complicity in the persecution of sexual minorities. At last report, and after a few more polite rejections, Museveni will host the promotional event at the Hotel Las Colinas, which ranks number 45 out of 76 hotels in the Irving area and offers a group rate of just over $100 a night, hardly a setting befitting a president.
And finally,
Uganda criminalizes homosexuality and the act of homosexuality. Coming out to speak boldly, people will think you're insane, you're crazy. Others will think you have been paid by the Western world to promote, that's the word they use, as if it's business.
That was the environment for prominent Ugandan activist John Long Jones Wambere, who worked for LGBT rights in his country for more than 17 years until he decided he would further the cause best by staying alive in another country rather than be killed for his activism at home. He was outed on the front pages of local Ugandan tabloids, repeatedly harassed by strangers, and suffered death threats, arrests, evictions, and was beaten unconscious. He came to the U.S. for an LGBT conference in February and, facing almost certain arrest upon his return to Uganda, requested asylum in May. His attorneys at GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, announced this week that Wambere's asylum filing had been granted. He's still subject to a mandatory background check before final approval is issued. "I must say that I am blessed," he said in a statement. "I call upon everyone who helped me to continue to support LGBTI people around the world. My thoughts are with Uganda. I have sleepless nights while I worry about my community there."
That's NewsWrap for the week ending September 20th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
We're reminded how much LGBT people have in common no matter where they are, and it's always getting better. But first, a major collection of LGBT relevant papers, photographs, and other items of historical significance, including scripts, props, and set decor from a groundbreaking TV series, was donated in August to the National Museum of American History, part of the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. Curators announced this week that they're hoping to add anti-LGBT material to the collection, such as a "God Hates Fags" placard from the notorious Westboro Baptist Church. If there's audio in that part of the collection, may we suggest this rabid radio rant by a well-known right-winger.
Is it the Museum of Natural History or Unnatural History? Hello, I'm Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council in Washington. You can't blame people for asking after the Smithsonian's decision to add a special exhibit on the LGBT movement. The collection highlights everything from Will and Grace show props to a transgender pride flag. Sports, politics, and cultural memorabilia are all a part of the propaganda, which, like most Smithsonian projects, is funded by taxpayer dollars. Quote, "It's a good example," said the director, "of the kind of work that we want to move forward with," end quote. And that's exactly what people should be afraid of. This is just another platform for the left to rewrite history and ignore the destructive side effects of homosexuality. Students are already bombarded with the LGBT agenda. Do they really need to walk past exhibits treating its extremists as heroes? The Smithsonian may know art, but it should stop trying to frame the cultural debate. For more, go to TonyPerkins.com.
A popular project that's been bringing hope to harassed LGBT youth since 2010 has inspired a documentary called It Got Better. Our correspondent Chris Ann Eastwood was there for the Outfest premiere in Los Angeles and chatted briefly with one of its featured celebrities.
I'm Jason Collins, and I'm an NBA professional basketball player.
Now, you came out last year, and it's been great as far as you say. I was expecting somebody else to come out, because your experience has been terrific. As all we know.
Yes.
So I thought there'd be more.
It goes back to everybody has to live their own path. The only thing I can do is show people that it's okay. You're the, sort of the canary going in the mine shaft and showing everybody it's okay to, you know, live your life, and you can have your life off the court, and you can still be a professional athlete. And the media attention will come. It's one of those things that goes back to more and more people need to take that brave step, so that one day when a professional athlete does come out, it's okay, and you know, can you help us win ball games?
We've talked about you being a mentor to, you know, nameless folks who are thinking about it, but active players, teammates, opposition, your guys from Stanford, Harvard, Westlake, wherever, the straight guys, are they asking you questions? Are they asking for education?
Yeah, some of them are. I've actually had a funny conversation with Robbie Rogers about this, about some of the funny questions that some of our teammates will ask us, and it's cool that, you know, some people, it's just, if you're not exposed to something, it's like you just don't know, and then you just, but to see them just ask questions about, you know, what it's like to be gay, or because some of their family members might be, and they just don't know how to talk, and it's just like, it's just more and more direct communication and more exposure to help change people's minds or continue to create an environment of inclusion.
Were there any times in your career before you came out where there was something that if you were had a wife or dating woman, you could talk to people about, and you came with such a huge secret on top of buried on it?
No, nothing along those lines, because again, I didn't go out on my first date or until after the Sports Illustrated article. But I will say that there was the hardest part being quiet was when I played for the Washington Wizards, and you know, I was playing in and living in Washington, D.C. in March of 2013 when the Supreme Court cases were being argued, and here I was, a professional athlete, playing for the hometown team. And I was in the closet and quiet while the Supreme Court, and I lived less than 3 miles from the Supreme Court. And here are these two monumental cases being argued that have a direct impact on my life, on my happiness. And I was quiet. And it was a lot of discussions with my friends and family, those people at the time who were the only ones who knew my secret. But I'm so grateful and so thankful to the attorneys, to the plaintiffs, to all the people who supported them. And every single facet, you know, financial, emotional, whatever support you gave, and also the straight allies, and having other professional athletes like Brendan Iamadejo or Chris Cluey write amicus briefs, and just so proud and so thankful for them that they were vocal. And now that I have this platform, it's a responsibility, but it's also, you know, I just enjoy talking, and I enjoy speaking up and speaking out because I was quiet for so long.
Well, the biggest areas for homophobia for most of us, especially for young guy athletes, is high school.
Yeah.
And so what would you say to high school kids today, especially high school boy athletes, about any homophobia or any kind of stuff they have going on?
To the straight kid, I would say none of my teammates, none of my coaches, none of my owners, no one had a problem with having a gay teammate. These are Hall of Famers. These are professional athletes. So who are you to have an issue? If you want to get here to the pros, this is how you're going to have to conduct yourself. This is how you're going to have to support your teammate. And this is going to be the future. You can get with this or find something
else.
So
get on the bench.
So that's what I would say to the straight high school kid. And also to the straight kid who is an ally, continue to be an ally. Continue that if you see something that's wrong, continue to be vocal, because sometimes that LGBT kid isn't quite yet ready to be the loudest one in the room and maybe is still working things out. But as a straight ally, if you see something wrong or hear language being used that's inappropriate, speak up and speak out on it. To the LGBT kid, I say, know that there is a community that's waiting to support you and love you and accept you for who you are. And with regards to your sport, it doesn't matter. Race sport is the ultimate equalizer with regards to, it doesn't matter your religion, your sexual orientation, your race, your whatever. It's how hard do you work at your sport? How much time do you devote to being the best that you can possibly be. Because that's all that coaches really care about is, are you a good teammate? Do you have the talent to help our team win?
That was pro basketball player Jason Collins in conversation with Chrisanne Eastwood.
Hi, I'm Andrew Sullivan. Listeners all over the world tune in to This Way Out for information, entertainment, and up-to-the-minute news from lesbian and gay communities around the world.
They quit their jobs to travel the world for a year in search of LGBT communities for a video documentary. That's how Katie Cook and Maggie Young became the Sapphic Nomads. They've been sending audio postcards to This Way Out along the way. Here's their latest dispatch from the world's second most populous nation.
The way people look at LGBT, the way people make fun, the way people think of them as someone abnormal, that's one thing I would want to see vanish if possible.
In our last episode from Mumbai, India, we talked to Shruta, a training officer at Hamsafar Trust. She talked a little bit about the current situation for gay, lesbian, and trans people in India. In this second episode of our four-part series from India, we asked Shruta about her personal experiences of identifying as bisexual.
What happens is a lot of bisexual people take time to come to terms with themselves, and when they first go into the community, it's not very accepting because people often think that, okay, you're someone who steps on two stones at the same time. You know, you're taking best of both worlds. You're trying to take advantage of the situation. Oh, it's okay. At the end of the day, you'll go and fit back into the heterosexual world. I would say that bisexual people feel alienated. At least I do sometimes when I'm in a crowd that's rather gay and lesbian. I don't see where I stand. A lot of the times people tell me that I don't look queer enough, and I'm not sure how am I supposed to take that. I mean, how queer does one have to look to be queer? So that's one thing. And the other thing that I face sometimes is just frustration because people don't seem to understand where I'm coming from. When I'm with a guy, it's like, oh, you're bisexual, kinky stuff. When I'm with a lesbian, it's like, okay, you know what? You're going to leave me for a guy at the end of the day. So I'm not sure what to call that feeling, but that's, I guess, something that most bisexuals would identify with.
We asked Shruta about her own coming out story.
I don't think I actually came out to myself till I was around 21, 22. I mean, I did date girls before that. But then coming from an all-girls convent school, I thought it was a rite of passage to be, you know, friendly with girls. But I realized after some time that maybe this is not just, you know, a two-minute thing to get done and over with. Because I from an all-girls school, my next step was to a co-education, co-ed college. I still had my attraction towards girls. I dated a few of them. And I didn't date guys till I was 17. Till that time, for me, it was like, okay, I'm just not attracted. Maybe that's how I am. And after I started dating guys, for a very long time, I didn't date any girls. So I thought, okay, it was a phase. Maybe I'm out of it. Maybe I'm not queer. And then it all started back. I mean, what happened was I got into a long-distance relationship with a guy. And while he wasn't around, I noticed myself getting attracted to girls as well. Like when he was in front of me, I had eyes all for him. It was just when he wasn't around that the drifting started happening. So I got a bit worried. I called up my boyfriend back then and I told him, you know what? I'm in love with this girl in my class. And he laughed it off initially. Then he was like, do you need to see a psychiatrist? I'm like, no, I don't need to see anyone. I'm just telling you, I'm not done anything. I'm trying to be faithful here. He laughed it off. And I knew that it wasn't a laughing matter. So I tried to do a little bit of introspection going back to the times when I was with women, dating women. And it took a little bit of soul searching, a little bit of acceptance on my part to realize that maybe I'm attracted to both. Maybe I'm attracted to everything. He didn't take it too well. We broke off when I returned. Coming out to others, I think it was a conscious decision to let all the people I date know about my sexuality so that I avoid what happened with my guy. So every time I dated a guy, I made a conscious decision to tell him I'm bi. Every time I went out with a lesbian woman or any girl for that matter, that's when I told her, look, I'm bi. So decide whether you're fine with it at this stage itself or we don't take it ahead from here on. I'm not very out to my family members. I'm totally out about queer issues. My family knows that I actually go for pride marches. My mom helps me design my clothes for pride marches. And she knows I'm a part of this youth group. She knows I'm a core member. She knows what the youth group does. But it's not exactly a conversation that we've had across the table where, you know, I sit my mom down and I tell her, you know what, mom, I'm bi. That's not there yet, but I think she understands what's happening. With my sister, there were instances where I was just outed in a very random way. And everyone I accidentally got outed to was fine with it.
We then asked Shruta how she thought her family might react if she decided to come out to them.
I come from a family that's not very conservative. I'm happy about that. But at the same time, she comes with a set of values and a set of morals that I guess come with people of that generation, Indian people of that generation. It took me a long time to convince her that homosexuality was normal. Once I did, there was no looking back. My mom is one of the strongest supporters I know of the LGBT cause. My gay friends come over at my place. They're out to my mom. My lesbian friends come over. They're out to my mom. And she's totally accepting. She's like, no, this is normal. This is what happens. And it's okay. Just accept it. Get on with it. I don't know how she would react if she found out her daughter was queer. But I think she'd be cool enough to know that, okay, if this can happen to other people's children, I'm sure this can happen to my child too. She would cry a little bit, I'm sure. She'd say, why didn't you tell me this before? My family is understanding in a way. I'm 26 and most Indian women of my age are married. They have kids. Kids, plural, yes. And my family has still not forced me to get married, to find a guy. Or they haven't even tried to arrange me anywhere. They just let me do my own thing. So it's unusual for parents to be so supporting. It's unusual for parents to let their girls do what they want. It's unusual for parents to, you know, think of their girl child as an independent person. So I'm lucky.
This concludes the second part of a four-part series from India. To learn more about our Sapphic Nomads project, please visit our website at www.nomaddocumentary.com, or you can visit our Sapphic Nomads Facebook page. Till next time, this is Maggie Young with fellow Sapphic Nomad Katie Cook, reflecting on our time in Mumbai, India for This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Carol Myers, Wenzel Jones, and Chris Ann Eastwood contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. You heard music from It Gets Better, Broadway Sings for the Trevor Project, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KRZA, Alamosa, Colorado, Free Radio Edmonton, Edmonton, Alberta, WPSU, University Park, Pennsylvania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.